Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. Kyle, this is a big week for us. It's a big week for the show. And it's not just because we got a little bit of fun with one of the podcast's favorite topics, the thick Jon Rahm being one part of the winning team at the Zurich over the weekend. But this is the beginning of an absolute onslaught of podcasts. It's a pod slot. We are bringing you three episodes per week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, for at least the foreseeable future and the remaining of the major schedule, I would guess. So we will be working in more guests. We're going to have some daily and weekly features that you will be introduced to. Some sound coming in from time to time. Kyle, this is an exciting moment for the show.
Yeah, it's great. I'm fired up about it. You know, I think that one of our sort of plans for the shows is also to do these, or to release these, I guess, early afternoon. And you know, it's been interesting. You and I have been in the hashtag content world for, I don't know, almost a decade now, probably. You maybe over a decade. And it's interesting to see how people's consumption of stuff evolves. And I think that one of the big things that you see right now, and the reason I say this, because I do it myself, is like, when do I consume things? You know, and for me, it's podcasts in the morning when I go to the gym. For some people, it's when they come home from work in the afternoon. So our goal was to kind of hit that afternoon time, which I think is fun. And Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we might mix it up during major weeks, depending on like, you know, what the weekend looks like. And, you know, like on Friday we taped, during Masters week, we taped on Friday. So, the only deviation probably would be a major week, but yeah, I'm excited about it. It's crazy. I was thinking about this over the weekend. It's the Zurich Classic and you're like, okay, whatever. And there's like a ton of news to talk. There's a ton of stuff to talk about. So it's definitely the heart of the season, and we have a lot to get to.
So here's what you have to look forward to here in Monday's show. We are going to be looking at Tiger Woods not playing at the Wells Fargo, having a conversation about whether or not it matters, a discussion of the Zurich Classic, the format altogether. We've got a stat of the day for you, and man, we always talk about our over-unders. It'll be over-under Mondays, coming in each Monday, breaking down some over-unders, and I think you're going to like this one. But we do begin at the Zurich Classic. So Jon Rahm and Ryan Palmer get the win. There's a lot to... Number one, you go with the Ryan Palmer angle, and we looked at this duo going into it. Like, man, this is huge for him individually. Yeah. This is a PGA Tour win that gets him into the Masters. Does it get him into the Tour Championship? Or at least get him enough FedEx Cup points so that he'll be well positioned for the playoffs. I mean, there's a lot of fallout from being able to be the winning pair at the Zurich.
So it actually doesn't get him into the Masters.
Wow.
Because
okay.
the Masters apparently does not recognize the. I don't think it does. I don't think they recognize the team event, but it does get him into, I believe I saw the 2019 this year's PGA. So 3 weeks from now. And then next year's Players Championship.
Okay.
So there's certainly some benefits, and we're going to talk about whether that's I don't know, the team thing is weird to me, because, and we'll talk about this later with the Koepka brothers, but yeah, I mean, it's great for him. You know, it's funny because I joked about this last night when we did an HQ show, but like, apparently he only plays with top 10 guys in the world. So now Jordan Spieth's out of the top 10. So he's like, oh, I'll go with John Rahm now. That's a joke, obviously, because Spieth just decided not to play Zurich, but it was a cool story. You know, I think we get caught up in we talk about this all the time. We get caught up in the 12 guys that matter. But for him, it's a big deal to get a win. Hasn't won in 9 years. His wife and son are there. I thought Rahm said this well in his interview on Sunday with Peter Kostas. He said, look, Palmer's wife and son came over to hug him. And he said, nothing I can say right now is as good as what you're watching on TV. It was Rahm like took over the broadcast there for a second, which was great. It's cool to see Rahm win because he's the star. But I thought from a human interest story, it was even cooler to see Ryan Palmer get a win.
They fed off each other. They played pretty well in the alternate shot. And by the way, you're the joke about only playing with top 10 players in the world. I'm sure that there's someone who just has been running their local member guest by having a similar approach, right? Like someone or people in that player's flight are very, very angry and nodding their heads right now. The relatable Ryan Palmer bringing in the ringer in the team play. For the alternate shot portion of this championship, which was on Friday and Sunday, a lot of it, I mean, I hate to take us into like the non-analytical, you know, to step away from, we value the statistics, we value our strokes gained numbers, but just to be able to feed off each other, to be able to have that positive energy back and forth for two players that I did not know had much of a relationship prior to this, I felt like they made a pretty good team. And when it came to trying to close this thing out on Sunday, it just looked like the cup was appearing to be huge for both of them.
Yeah, they shot 33 on the back nine. I mean, the way they played an alternate shot was, I mean, they shot 65 on Friday. And I wrote this. I thought that's where they won the tournament. They didn't actually get the trophy until Sunday, but 65 an alternate shot on Friday, or whenever the third round ended, or second round, Saturday morning, whatever. That was pretty impressive. They made on Sunday back nine. They made putts on the back. They didn't, no bogeys, bogey free, three birdies, 14 feet, 7 feet, 6 feet, 3 feet, 11 feet, 24 feet, 5, 3, 1. So they made everything they looked at. The only putt they missed was on 18. And it was like a 10 footer for birdie or something like that. And they narrowly missed that. So if you're putting like that with two really good ball strikers, Rahm obviously, and Palmer, who historically has been, you know, a top 30 or top 40 guy from tee to green. If they're putting like that, it's they're going to be up there. By the way, do you think if Palmer next year, what if Rahm texts him in like April or in like March? It's like, hey, you know, we're defending, like ready to get back to New Orleans. And Palmer's like, I mean, Rory's playing this year, and so
next year. He's just gonna keep, he's just gonna keep moving up the chains with that one.
that'd be a power play. That'd be awesome.
You mentioned Brooks and Chase earlier. What were your feelings about the brothers Koepka in this precarious position where it seems like Chase's credentials, as we joked going into the weekend, that he just kind of had it on auto renew with his credit card, because at best we can tell, his professional status is it is hanging in the balance.
Yeah, I looked into this a little bit, and apparently, so he lost his card last year, and he's waiting. I guess apparently the European Tour's web.com, their version of the web.com, the Challenge Tour.
That's right.
I don't think it's started yet, and so he's sort of waiting for that, I think. So he's basically been playing these mini tour events in Florida, and then all of a sudden you get into Zurich, and it's just a weird thing, man, because like if they win, I mean, if Brooks goes out and just plays out of his mind and basically carry, and that's sort of what happened. I looked at their best ball days, so Thursday, Saturday, Brooks made 11 birdies and an eagle, and Chase contributed 3 birdies.
Mm.
And so you're like, well, what are we doing here? Like, and that's, you know, some of that is like, okay, well, maybe he made birdies and Brooks just made them for, you know, whatever. But I don't know. It just seems kind of weird. Like, I don't know that I love the ability to do that.
You don't like, you would rather Brooks have to select somebody for a PGA Tour event who is all carded up and not just seemingly along for the ride.
Yeah, or maybe like maybe there's some sort of deal where like if you win, some of the benefits are only based on whether or not you're a web.com member or a PGA Tour member. And so all of a sudden it's not like Brooks carries Chase to a win and now Chase Koepka is in the 2020 Players Championship.
Well, I mean, and you know, the reason probably that we're not going to have that scenario is that Brooks had to carry, Brooks would have to go very, very far to carry him. And,
right.
You know, from the weekend action that we just saw, it should not be surprising that Brooks Koepka, one of the world's best golf talents, would carry another player who's on the fringe of not being on the Challenge Tour, right? Like, if we remove their last names and tell you that Brooks and Chase, multiple-time major winner, currently waiting for the Challenge Tour season to start, the idea that Brooks would carry him makes perfect sense. So I guess your angle is, you know, that's fine if they want to play, but you're willing to have the loose standards on getting in. It's just that the rewards for winning, like we were talking about with Ryan Palmer, meaningful rewards that include the players next year and the PGA Championship this year, that's where it would seem like the plus one has gone a little bit too far.
I mean, I think so. Do you disagree?
I guess I disagree, but it is that's also a little bit of faith. That's a little bit of faith in the system, in that when you have all these world-class golfers playing, that it's just going to be really, really tough for Brooks to truly carry the load of someone who's not credentialed to be there, or
sure,
any golfer.
But I mean, yeah, sure. But like, they're in it on Sunday. They finished T22nd and shot like 75 on Sunday. Like, they were like kind of in it going, I mean, they were, I don't know, 4 back going into the final round, but you're still like, okay, is this what we want professional golf to be?
Thank you, Coach Saban. I loved our late charge from Sergio Garcia and Tommy Fleetwood.
That was my tournament. I didn't even watch the rest of it. I was just, that was just so, like, Sergio had a great quote. He said, where is that? He was like just effusively praising Tommy Fleetwood. And he called Sunday's 68 one of the easiest 68s in foursomes ever shot. Ever. In the history of golf.
He was fist pumping. He was screaming. It was awesome.
It was great. And it just, to me, it goes back to Ryder Cup stuff. Like, there are no bad European pairings. Like, Tommy and Sergio they didn't play together because Fleetwood was with Molinari the whole time. And you're like, oh, I could envision Fleetwood and Sergio going 3-1 at Whistling Straits. That's pretty easy to envision. So I don't know, man. They're just, I love the Euro Ryder Cup guys. They're so much fun.
And we had on the President's Cup side, a woeful performance from our Aussies, Adam Scott and Jason Day.
It wasn't great. You know, so they missed the cut. They're 7-under after 2 rounds, missed the cut by 1. I don't want to like lose my mind about it, because when you look at some of this team stuff, the scores are so volatile. Like, Ian Poulter and Sam Horsfield made the cut by 1. So they were 1 better than Scott and Day after 2 rounds. And then they ended up finishing top 10 because they play well over the last 2 days. So these scores are like, you're getting these, you know, 62, 63s, especially in best ball. So I don't know. I don't want to overreact too much to that, but don't know that it bodes super well for Mr. Ernie Els's President's Cup team come December.
I'm not going to have any big President's Cup takeaways, but I was pretty disappointed. They were some of the first ones out on Thursday, and then things get immediately washed out. Like, we got the Lightning in the area. They only had about, what, 6 or 7 holes that they got in. The whole flow of the championship was very, very strange.
Maybe there weren't enough balloons for Day to blow up to activate his ribs or whatever.
Is that what he's been doing? Wait, for real? I thought that was a shot at him being at the amusement park when he withdrew.
No. So during the Masters, he was talking about how he blows up balloons to get his like rib cage in the right place or something.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was a real thing.
Real quotes, real statements by a professional golfer. Major winner. Yeah.
I just Googled Jason Day balloon, and the routine that Jason Day, he told this to Marty Smith, I think, of ESPN. He said, "This is going to sound really weird. I have to get my rib cage back in position. So my rib cage is out of position. Let's see. Where's the balloon part? I blow into balloons in certain positions to try and get my rib cage down. But then I've got these other exercises." He just goes on and on and on about all this. It's crazy.
I hope he does it in the locker room. I hope he does it in front of all other golfers.
Koepka walks by and he's like, "What the hell are you doing?"
Yes. Yeah. I want Jason Day to be trying to get his ribs in order by blowing into a balloon in front of like Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson's locker.
Pat Perez.
Yeah. Oh, no. Pat Perez thinks he's taking whippets and comes over and he's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm in."
That's good. All right. So, yeah, maybe the break was not enough balloons during the weather delay for the Aussies.
Yeah. And now it is time for Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. We've been taking a look at golfers. We also are going to take a look at events, and we are going to turn our attention for this Stock Up, Stock Down to the Zurich Classic. It has been moved around as part of the reshuffle with the PGA Championship, which you can watch on CBS coming up in just a few weeks at Bethpage Black. Zurich, just outside of New Orleans. We've got the team play. We've gone over the format in the last couple podcasts. With this in the rear view, how are you feeling about the event in and of itself? Like, is this a stock up or stock down event for you?
It's interesting because you get these events that are unconventional, and I feel like what comes out of them is always like everybody always has to have a take on the format at the end of the event. Like, we never play the Wells Fargo, for example, and get to the end and people are like, "You know what would make the Wells Fargo better is this." But like every year at the end of the Zurich, people are like, "You know what would make the Zurich better is whatever." And it was interesting because Gary McCord on the broadcast was talking about on Sunday, he's like, "I'm bored. I don't like this format on Sunday. I don't like the alternate shot on Sunday." I was like, "Wow, okay. I guess we're doing this." And Bill McAtee's trying to like bring it back, and it's pretty hilarious. And going into the tournament, I sort of agreed with McCord in the sense of like, not like I wanted best ball on Sunday because you get birdies, you get eagles, whatever. But after having watched it, and I actually did watch after Fleetwood and Sergio finished, I sort of like the alternate shot because I think there's more opportunity for different teams to assume the lead. Mm. Like, if you have best ball, like, you're not going to, and you're playing well, you're not going to shoot worse than like 64.
Right.
And so it's just, it's hard to run somebody down from behind. So I kind of like, Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Schwartzel, I think they're a pair. They both, in the alternate shot portion, they both hit a ball out of bounds consecutively and made like a 9 on a hole. And so like it's like one shot from each guy, and then you're staring at a, you know, quintuple bogey. So I don't know. I'm kind of in on it. But, you know, other people were talking about, do they go to like, you know, match play style on the weekend? And I don't know. I kind of like it the way it is. Like, just get better players and keep building it up. Get a different course maybe. But other than that, I'm stock up. I'm in.
Oh, I'm stock way up. And it's because of those like member guest feels. Like, it just, it feels like the kind of pairing and that you would have at a golf club in a weekend full of action, where it's, you know, you and your partner, and it's not y'all against the other teams that you're, or the other pair that's in your foursome. It's y'all against the field, and it's kind of, you know, wide open and go get it. And I like it, because what I saw from the players this weekend, even with having to do most of round two and round three all on Saturday, squeezing this thing in, I mean, I feel like I still saw some like joy and fun and just a little bit of a change in the routine. I don't think that we need to, you know, tweak it too much, because it seems to be a format that is relatable enough. I mean, if you get more of like golf's superstars and superstar type pairings, then that would change maybe the boredom level as you're coming down the stretch. But I looked at this, and what was it? Before Sunday started, there were maybe seven or eight groups that were all had a decent shot at it.
Yeah, I think so. The variables that go into an event are the quality of player, the quality of the course, and then the format. And you look at this and you're like, okay, well, maybe this isn't a great event. What's the easiest thing? What's the lowest hanging fruit? What's the easiest thing to change? And you go to format, right? Because it's hard to get good players. Are you going to change the course? I don't know. And so I just feel like people run to that, when the reality is like, you could if you played this at Augusta and had all the best players, people would like, nobody would be talking about the format.
Right.
And so I don't think that's really the answer.
I'm in on it. I'm in on it. I'm in on the Zurich. Stock up. And it's 100% biased because John Rahm won. And that is Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. Whether we should be making a big deal about what Tiger not playing in the Wells Fargo, we'll get into that. Plus, over-unders in our stat of the day right after this.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
So Tiger originally on the schedule for the Wells Fargo. That was one of the 9 or 10 events, I believe, that you ranked for the most likely places where Tiger might be able to get his record-tying PGA Tour win. He has decided that he is not going to play. Kyle, are you making a big deal out of this?
No. I don't think so. I'm glad he's not playing. I think it's good. I think it's good for him. I think that I was talking to my wife about this, and she was like, why didn't he just play the majors? And I was like, yeah, I agree.
Just play the majors.
Just play the, you know, play all four in the John Deere. Just play all the majors. And
he's basically there.
Well, yeah,
majors in the majors in the playoffs.
The thing that gives me pause was this quote from Mark Steinberg to Bob Herrig on ESPN.com. He said, nobody should lose their mind over this. There's a huge difference between being hurt and being sore. And you're like, okay, did anybody ask you about his? Maybe there was a question about his injury that I just missed from in that exchange. And then he said, he's sore after most tournaments he plays. He requires some downtime and doesn't feel he has enough time to get ready for next week. And so that's like a, that gives me like 1% pause. I still don't think it's a big deal. And I think that at this point in his career, like I kind of feel like he should play 8 events a year. I mean, I know we're kind of joking about just the majors, but why not play the majors, play the players, play a couple playoffs, play the Memorial, and that's it.
Play like Torrey.
That do what?
Play Torrey.
Yeah, maybe Torrey or whatever.
Or another, like one of the California swing tournaments.
But he doesn't need to be playing, you know. Yeah, he would play, he'll play Riviera because his foundation does that deal. But yeah, play 9 events, play 10 events, whatever. What's interesting, and somebody brought this up, I can't remember who. It might have, I don't know who it was. He might go, so this stretch, this major season stretch, so Masters until the Open in July. I think it's July 14th is the Open, or is Sunday of the Open. He might only play 5 times. He might play Masters and then PGA and then probably Memorial because that's in between PGA and US Open. Then US Open and then Open Championship. He might not play Memorial. He might only play 4 times. He might only play the majors this stretch.
You shared in our golf workroom about a 10-minute interview with Golf TV. I watched it all, and it changed my mind on the reaction here. I think that his comments showed me someone who really had just been kicking it since he won. You know, he talked about, he said, I haven't started the process of getting my body ready for my next tournament. I hadn't started the mental process. And remember, this is Tiger Woods. I wake up at 3:45 a.m. to start my process. Yeah,
he's like, been sleeping in until about 4:30 probably.
Right. But he was like, yeah, I've just been going back and forth to school. I went to the club a few times just to play some rounds of golf. And he immediately transitioned not from what playing golf felt like, but instead to how great it was to get a bunch of hugs from all the members. Like I saw... There really does seem to be a little bit of a true honeymoon period. There does seem to be a little bit of a, like, post exams, I'm just going to go to the beach for a week and just like let off some steam. I just think that he has really put in so much work to get to this point. He seems to be allowing himself to let it go for a little bit. And that, you know, I've got a couple reactions to that. Number one, good for you. You're 43 years old. You've been through hell. Like, if you want to just sit back and do the things that make you happy, then absolutely go and do it. Number two, that if he was considering the Wells, he has to know, or part of the equation, and maybe this is with Steiny too, or his whole management team, part of the equation is going to be that the hype for your next tournament is through the roof. And if you're not feeling it, then that could be a really frustrating situation, right?
Yeah.
Like if
for sure.
Yeah, if you're feeling cold, you don't want to be going in kind of half-assing it when you just won the Masters and every single, like, the entire Quail Hollow club is just going to be zoned in on you the entire time. And so
and especially at a course like that.
Yeah.
So you know, where it's kind of brawny, it's kind of like, I mean, just thinking about like the 18th hole, like it's hard, you know? So yeah, I agree with that, but I think that speaks to like the fact that he should only play 8 events.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I'm cool with that. But I will also say that it has changed listening to those conversations and hearing about what his time since the Masters win has been like. I'm not going to fade Tiger Woods specifically at the PGA, but I don't think I'm going to pick him to win.
Yeah, I know. I do. So two other things. One, there was a video of him, I think this was on the Golf TV Twitter account, like walking into the celebration that they had, cutting a cake. And he looked like he like couldn't, like if you asked him to like run a sub 9 second 40, like he would struggle to do it.
With the way he was moving or the way he looked?
Yeah, okay. I don't know if he had just like come from the gym or what. And I don't know, man. I don't know like what all goes into getting his body ready for, you know, in a given day for a tournament. Like it might be like way more extensive than I imagined it to be. So that's one. That's the other thing that I'm kind of like, and he used like weird language. He was like, oh, I've just been laying around.
Yeah.
Just been laying there.
What?
It's like, what? I don't know. There's just something weird. I don't. And maybe it's nothing. It probably is nothing. Like we overanalyze everything with him. But then the other thing, and I think that he's been thinking about this more, is I know there's a real chance at 18 majors again.
Right.
And I think that reality, the reality of winning the Masters and giving himself that shot again, has maybe made him think differently about like what this, not just the 2019 schedule should be, but like how many more majors can I play in to have that shot? Because who, like honestly, who cares about Bay Hill?
Right.
Who cares about Tour? No, but it doesn't matter at all. Like he cares about his foundation, the charity work, all that stuff, and then the majors. And so maybe that means he just plays Riviera and the four majors. And that's great. But I do think that part of it has entered his mind again, as it should. And that's going to be a big storyline, which is fun for us and great for him.
Well, it's, and I remember my fear as Tiger Woods started making real efforts at returning was that his role on the PGA Tour was going to be as a sideshow circus character, something where he does show up to the majors and everyone goes out just so that they can be able to tell their grandkids, I saw Tiger Woods play in person, but he's never really a threat. And the thing that's exciting is if he's going to make this a, I'm only playing in the majors and, you know, Riviera, my foundation, like if he's going to go super light schedule, then it does become a little bit of a sideshow just seeing him in person. But the difference is he's an actual threat to win, which makes it all the more intriguing, whether you're there or especially from our seat where we're probably going to be forced to talk about him either way. So it's nice that he's actually a for real threat.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd rather him do that at the tournaments that matter than at the, you know, whatever, like the no offense, but the Valspar.
Right.
Like it's just, it's like, okay, well, if he, even if he, other than the you know, Sam Snead's record 82, like if he wins the Valspar, like what is that even like the Tour Championship, you're like, okay, well, what is this? It's like, it's cool that he's had this comeback and won, but what does it mean versus like winning the Masters? You're like, okay, this is like historically meaningful. And at this point, if you've got X number of swings left in your body, you might as well use them on the tournaments that matter.
Fair. All right, time for the stat of the day. Kyle, Statmaster, what's our stat of the day?
Yeah, I got some for you here. I've got 10 players have made the cut at the last five majors. So that's all the majors in 2018 and then the 2019 Masters. I want to see, I'm going to give you like 30 seconds to see how many you can name. You just throw somebody out there and I'll say yes or no. 10 players have made the cut at the last five majors. I want to see how many you can name and if you can tell me who's been the lowest under par of those 10.
Okay, let's start with the Dustin Johnson.
No.
Ooh, Justin Thomas.
No.
Jason Day.
No.
Justin Rose.
No.
Adam Scott.
No.
Holy cow. Well, it's not Brooks because he didn't play, right? In last year's Masters.
No.
Jordan Spieth.
No.
Tommy Fleetwood.
Yes.
All right. John Rahm.
No.
Is there a horn? Am I out of time?
Yeah, you're out of time.
Oh goodness.
That was so first of all, this is really tough. It's a weird list of 10 players. Second of all, that was terrible. And okay, so I'm going to go from worst.
Oh, is Tiger one of them?
No.
Is Phil one of them?
No.
Oh, wow. So I just had those were 15 shots and I just hit one.
You got Tommy Locks though. Okay, so it's real. A couple of them you should have gotten, but only a couple, because the others are like obscure, kind of, not obscure, but for a list like this, they're obscure. So we'll go from worst to first. So the worst of the 10 guys, in terms of score to par at the last five majors, of the 10 guys that have made every cut, Mark Leishman has taken 1,435 strokes at the last five majors.
Okay.
RCB, Rafa Cabrera Bello.
Cut making machine.
Tyrrell Hatton.
All right.
Are you ready for this one? Zach Johnson.
No! 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 Zach Johnson. And this is the last five. This isn't like a has compiled over time or dating back to 2015 you're saying you were saying the 2018 major season and the 2019 Masters, one of the only 10 players to make the cut at all those events is Zach Johnson.
Yeah, I'm saying Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson.
We're not.
Have not. But correct. Zach Johnson has.
Right.
The next one, which maybe you should have gotten, Xander.
Yeah, I should have gotten that one.
Tommy Fleetwood was number five on the list in terms of score to par, 1,409 strokes.
All right.
In those five tournaments. Webb Simpson, number four.
Should have gotten.
Then Frankie Moles, number three, Francesco.
All right.
And then your top two with exactly 1,400 strokes in the last five majors, Tony Finau.
Who's the other one?
Can you guess who's number one?
Tied with Tony Finau?
No, one stroke ahead of Tony Finau. The only player in the 1300s, 1,399 strokes.
And you've already admitted that it's not Rory. I've already incorrectly guessed that it's not. Oh, it's Bryson.
Nope, it's Ricky.
Oh!
It's a fun stat of the day.
It's a very fun stat of the day. All right, let's go from top to from Ricky. Take it down again. Who are the 10 players?
Leishman, RCB, Tyrrell Hatton, ZJ, Xander, Fleetwood, Webb, Frankie, Finau, Fowler.
And I guessed Dustin, Justin, Rose, like Spieth. Oh, goodness.
Tiger.
Tiger, yeah. Should have gotten Xander and Finau. And I said this on a, and watch CBS Sports HQ. You can get it through the CBS Sports app. You can get it from CBSSportsHQ.com. We were on, we had a 30-minute breakdown show on CBS Sports HQ, and I kind of tipped my hand a little bit there, but that I'm at this point with Finau where I believe that Finau is going to be a top 10 lock, but I'm not quite ready to fire on Finau as a major winner yet. And that's so unfair to Tony Finau and disrespectful to the way that majors are won or even golf tournaments are won, because, you know, we put in these abstract, oh, he's not quite there. He hasn't quite made the leap. And I understand that I'm being everything that I criticize, but I don't know. I just not ready for it yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's something to like feeling what it feels like to win a major. I don't know. Maybe that's narrative driven. That's just like a story I want to tell myself, but I don't know. I think there's something to that. You know, what's funny about this list is that like you look at Finau and Fowler, you're like, oh, they've been the most consistent over the last five majors. Like that's so good. You'd kind of rather be Patrick Reed, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
You'd kind of rather be Brooks Koepka.
Yes, absolutely.
And so it's just a, I don't know. Golf's weird, man. Like you're almost credited for like extreme volatility more than you are for extreme consistency.
Tony Finau's first major championship will be when he fires a 64 in the final round in the fourth to last group.
Tony Finau or Ricky Fowler?
Either one of them. Both of them are just so terrifying on heaters and just
let's. Yeah, I know. What? Okay. How about this? Let's start over unders this way. We're gonna move on to over unders now. Over under, and you're gonna ask me the rest, but I'll ask you this one: 1.5 majors combined for Finau and Fowler in their careers.
Under.
Wow. Under.
Ricky might never win one.
Nah, he's gonna win one. You can't beat. Yeah.
He might.
Maybe not. I know.
He might have like Ricky. How many PGA Tour wins does Ricky Fowler have right now?
Five.
He might have 17 PGA Tour wins at the end of his career, but no majors.
That would be. I mean, what's even a career comp? I mean, kind of Furyk. Furyk only won one major, the 03 U.S. Open. And he was, you know, really close at all these other ones. And he won, I don't know, I think 19 times on the PGA Tour. He almost won the Players. So I guess I can't say past tense he won. But he so far has won like 19 times. So maybe that's a good comp. He's super consistent, but never like a killer at majors. I don't know.
I mean, I think Ricky is more likely to win one than Finau, but I think Finau has more time.
Yeah. Finau is sneaky old, though. I think he's like 29.
Do you think that Ricky has... do you think Ricky will be just... Will he push it on the age, or will he be cranking it down like as he starts to get into his upper 30s?
Well, there's two things going on there. One, for a lot of these guys, like the money has never been an issue. Like they could have retired 5 years ago, all of them, Spieth, Fowler, whoever, and they're fine. And so like there's not that incentive like there was for other guys. But like what's Fowler going to do if he doesn't play golf?
Right.
Like is he going to race motorbikes when he's 43?
I don't think so.
I doubt it. He's going to like run track with his wife when he's 43. Probably not. So I don't know. I think for some of these guys in their head, they're like, oh, I'll be done by 40. And then they'll look around and be like, well, what else am I going to do? So I don't know. I think more of them than we think will play into their 40s and 50s.
All right. Over under time.
Yep.
John Rahm career wins. This last Zurich Classic was John Rahm's fourth?
Yeah, I think so. Are we saying like worldwide? Because he's got three or four on the European Tour also.
So that would be seven total?
I think he's got seven total, yeah.
Okay. We will say both because I imagine he will continue to compete. And I will say John Rahm.
He's got six total. Three PGA, three European.
Okay. John Rahm. Career wins, over under 18 and a half.
Oh, I'll go over.
Sure. Well, because he's so young. Is age a big part of this?
Yeah, he's 24. I just think, I mean, he's won, like his six wins, like the location of them is hilarious. So he wins San Diego Farmers. He wins... Palm Springs career builder. He wins Louisiana, and then he wins the Irish Open. He wins Dubai, and he wins the Spanish Open. Like he just wins everywhere.
you seem very impressed by the his professional golf like his passport. You're flipping through the stamps in John Rahm's winning professional golf passport, and you're like, what? Ireland too? Wow.
Yeah,
cultured.
I mean, you go from freaking TPC Louisiana to Royal County Down and win both. I don't know where the Irish Open was that he won. It wasn't Royal County Down. That's sick.
Do you think that is because, as everyone likes to say about John Rahm, that because he's just got all the shots, his game travels as well as anybody else?
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's a guy that like, I know we get on the, like, you know, super gets angry and rages or whatever, but I think he I think he really like cares a lot about being great and about winning. And he's another guy. It's like, this is just what he does, you know? Like, I don't think he plays golf because of the fame or the money or anything like that. I think he plays golf just because he loves golf.
All right.
And so I think that kind of thing matters when I'm factoring in like longevity.
All right. So I said 18 and a half. You said over. Let's go with a, let's go with this, a second run at this. If I bumped it up to 23 and a half, would you still be going over?
I'd go over. The number I thought of was 25.
Oh, wow. It's a lot. It's a lot of winning. It's a lot of winning. All right. Over under Tiger tournaments played the rest of the year. PGA, US, the Open Championship, Tour Championship, two playoff events. So that gets us to six. I'm going to say over under 6.5.
I'll go under.
So you're saying no Memorial. Basically, the 6.5 is me making you choose between Memorial or the idea that he could sit out one or two playoff events.
Yeah, the playoff events. Here's what's going to be interesting. Is he going to play in the I don't think he is, but the question is, does he play St. Jude, the WGC in Memphis the week after Port Rush? That's going to be weird. I don't know what that's going to be like. Cause like never has there been more energy and like focus on the majors. You're going to travel to Memphis coming from Port Rush a week later and play that. I mean, it is a WGC. It's free money and points and whatever, but I don't know, man. I mean, the Masters win is he's going to be in the Tour Championship regardless. I think he sits out a playoff event. Maybe. I don't know. I'll go under.
Yeah. Under 6.5. Hey, Tiger, go to the WGC at Memphis. Go say what's up to Gary Parrish. He's a cool dude. Go sit with him. Go do an afternoon on the Gary Parrish show in Memphis.
I need a Tony Allen Tiger Woods afternoon.
Oh, my God. Talk to me. Talk. Does Tony Allen play golf?
No, I don't think so.
No. Found out Juvenile plays golf.
I saw that.
Speaking of Louisiana.
I had Tony Allen on my OSU podcast one time. And I don't know if I'm supposed to tell this story publicly, but I am. And I called him, and it was I called him from Skype, and he didn't like that.
Because it gave him like a weird number?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, what? Why are you calling me from a blocked number? Or something, I don't know, blocked, private, whatever. And I was like, I don't know. Why am I calling you?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
He was great, though.
Yeah.
He was awesome. He turned out to be great.
That's awesome. So I got to get that. Actually, I'm not going to Skype. If you want to talk sponsorships, holler at me. Because you know, you know, I got that number. I got that number because I can't be terrifying any of the ultra paranoid football coaches. All right. And in this is a fun one. John Peterson has been
out of retirement.
He's been inspired by Tiger Woods. He was the he's got one professional win. He was the web.com Tour Finals winner in 2013. He retired last year from pro golf at the age of 30. And the former LSU Tiger, All-American there, and the national champion as well, says he's back. So over-under of John Peterson retirements, he's already got one. I'm going to set John Peterson retirements at 2.5.
I think he's got like three unofficial retirements and then one official one.
Oh, really?
And the way he came out of retirement was basically like, he basically like called out Patrick Cantlay and was like, I'm better than that guy. And he almost just won the Masters. It's like, okay, dude. 2.5?
Yeah.
I'll go over.
You think he's got several more rounds of this stunt?
Oh, yeah. I think it's like his entire 30s. Like he'll like make a run at a PGA Tour event in like 2022 and then just be, you know, jaded by the whole thing, go back to Fort Worth, come back. It's going to be the rest of the deal.
Right. Do you know him? Do you ever run into him around the area?
No. We don't do a lot of hanging.
Aren't you playing Trinity Forest soon?
Yeah, I was supposed to play today, but I got a podcast to tape.
Listen to that, y'all. Listen to that dedication.
Yeah.
There you go. Maybe we'll get John Peterson on the podcast at some point. We can ask him over under about his retirement. Something tells me he's not going to take kindly to the joke.
Call him from a block number.
Yeah, exactly. he is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We'll be back with brand new show tomorrow, brand new show on Wednesday. Subscribe so that you get it all without having to come look for it. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.